This is the Toronto Today podcast. I'm your host, Greg Brady.
640 Toronto presents Think Tank, the breaking stories you care about, facts and opinions that get you through the day. Now, let's meet the guests.
Let's do that. She's a lawyer and one of the best video journalists we have in our country, and she's been prominent at so many protests, so many rallies, giving us stuff that, to be honest, we aren't always getting. Kareem Assad joins us on Toronto Today. It's great to have you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You truck it up to Ottawa sometimes as well. When do you decide on a weekend where you're going to go and where you're not going to go? Because we'd like to get peeled behind the curtain there.
Well, it's partly, you know, I keep an eye on what events are being promoted. And sometimes, you know, I have a craving for a particular city and just hit the road and let's have a fun weekend out of it.
That's that. Yeah. Got to multitask. Kevin Vaughn's independent MP for Spadina Fort York, and he joins us back on Think Tank. Good morning.
Morning, Greg.
By the way, you've publicly announced your awesome expanding family news. So congratulations from the 640 Toronto family on that.
Appreciate that. Very excited and a little nervous.
You should be. The first 3 months of your first child, you and your wife are expecting, and the first 3 months are like getting hit over the head with a sledgehammer repeatedly, and then it gets better, and the hits come a little less often, and then a little less often, and then they're older, and then they start up again. But anyway, it's all about life, and congratulations to you and Mrs. Vaughn.
Thank you very much, Greg.
You're welcome. Now, with responsibility and family comes tremendous scrutiny, and dangerous dogs are on the list for scrutiny. So for people who consider their dogs their little boys and girls, this is a story. There's going to be a visit potentially from city staff to owners of dogs deemed dangerous in the city of Toronto. Right now, we've got 373 dangerous dog orders in place in Toronto. I want you both to hear from City Councilor Paula Fletcher, who basically was the figurehead for this, but she got a ton of support on City Council to make sure that Torontonians are keeping their dogs in line. Here's what she said yesterday.
So let's find a way to make sure owners are really carrying out what's required of them when their dog has bitten somebody or seriously injured them previously.
Okay, so there's going to be visits, but there's a little bit of a concept, Kevin, that this is a meddling bureaucracy is the phrase I'd use. It's going to be costly. I don't doubt that something needs to be done, but dog owners are expected to sign their dog up for a 90-day obedience class. That's mandatory if their dog has been listed as dangerous. Have a sign in front of the yard. I don't know how we're going to enforce that day in, day out. And there's going to be like a living room visit or a backyard visit. This is almost Children's Aid Society stuff. How do you view this?
Well, Greg, this is an issue of safety and something that I think Torontonians expect of government. Toronto is notorious for having rules and bylaws that are never enforced. So I actually think this is the right decision in terms of keeping people safe and putting money to ensure that folks are held accountable. And you know what? I have to applaud Councillor Fletcher. It must be nice for her community to have a city councillor who actually cares about the community. Because last month, there was actually a dog attack in my community at Little Norway Park. It left a 9-year-old boy with life-altering injuries. And the owner had not only had one of those dangerous dogs, she was not complying with the previous dangerous dog order. And when this happened, it was particularly egregious because she ran away. And later, when Toronto police found her and arrested her, she was obviously charged and the dog was taken by animal control and all that sort of stuff. And now the main thing I want to focus on, though, is this public list. All right. I've been surfing this morning trying to navigate this list. Typical government fashion, not at all easy to use. We have the first three letters of the postal code. I don't know exactly where they are. I've been surfing the open data and the map. There's no points on the map. So there's actually more work the city needs to do to actually make it easier for people so we know where they are and we can take precautions.
I'll also clarify, some of the dogs on the list, Kevin, there's a dangerous occurrence listed as far back as 2017. And again, pets are our family. I know how I feel when I've lost pets previously. Kevin, some of these dogs probably aren't alive anymore.
Yeah, 100%. Right. And so I think that's another thing that we need to make sure that if they're going to do this, that they're actually making sure that you're using up-to-date information so people aren't scared for the children or their families for no reason.
Kareem, it's a real balancing act because you could put a sign out in front of your house and you could take your dog to obedience training. But so much of the issue is simply, are they on leash or are they off leash? We've all gone places and we sort of suss it out and think that dog's just having a great time catching a ball at the park. So if I go past that dog, he's not going to come at me. He's not going to come at my kids. But it's all about whether they're on leash or off leash sometimes.
I think that's a very important factor. And in Toronto, there are specific places to be off leash, and sometimes those rules aren't followed. I do know as well that for the dangerous dog designation, there's also a muzzling requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that can be an important matter of prevention as well, because you're dealing with the most dangerous aspect, right? Like the teeth and the jaws. As far as this enforcement goes, I don't know what the enforcement looked like prior to this. And so is this ramping up, or is it creating something where it was very laissez-faire to begin with? And given that anyone who has this designation, there has been an incident and it's been at least investigated to some extent, and these conditions were imposed, it is the responsibility of those dog owners to follow those rules. And you know, the honor system needs to be, in order for that to work, there needs to be at least some concern or sense that there will be follow-up. And if this provides a measure of follow-up, especially in light of the various high-profile dog attacks that have happened over the last few months, I think that that's worthwhile.
I'll give this to both of you. And Karima, you're a lawyer. You're very aware of this. The delays in our court system, I was going to even call out ourselves, and I don't mind saying it's me. Like this, in late March, there was a very infamous story about an incident that happened at Little Norway Park with a child with these life-altering injuries, and we finally tracked the woman down. There'd been a still photo of her, but she's probably not going to be in front of a judge for 14, 15 months. So it's really tough with the court delays to keep full focus on what the penalties actually are, and it doesn't serve as much of a deterrent if we don't know what they are.
Yeah, there's all different aspects of our system that interact with one another, and where there's a breakdown in one part, you know, we don't get the protection that you're otherwise hoping for. And when there are breakdowns in multiple parts of the system, that's even more unsettling.
All right, let's move it here. Kevin, anything else you want to add to this, given your, you have a jurisdiction, you have constituents that, and you had an attack in your own, in your own riding?
Yeah, I just want to touch on what you said about the delays in our justice system. That is another failure of Justin Trudeau's government. That is within their scope. And the fact that a judge had to rule and order them to do their damn job, to actually appoint judges and fill those vacancies, is an absolute shame. And they need to get their act together and appoint judges so people can get their get into the courts, get through that process, because justice delayed is justice denied.
Well said. Well, let's move it to this. And speaking of justice, it involves the Umar Zamir trial, his acquittal on Sunday, and a continuing push to get the premier of the province to apologize. For those who didn't hear it, Doug Ford was walked to his office by several media members, including our own Colin DeMello on the television side, Queen's Park Bureau Chief. Here's how Doug Ford reacted to the Zamir acquittal on Tuesday.
Do you feel like an apology is necessary, though, for that tweet?
Sorry.
Do you feel like there's an apology that's necessary, Premier, for that tweet? There are some who are saying that what you said was inappropriate in September of 2021.
Yeah, you know, something at that time, I had limited information. The courts have decided, the jury decided, and you have to respect the justice system.
Do you regret it? Do you regret it?
Again, what I was saying is there's a limited amount of information I had at the point, and the courts decided. So thanks, guys.
really dangerous stuff in a way, Karima, isn't it? Because we could make the case, hey, Ford's got the right. He can speak his mind at the moment. He's got a right to free speech. But I think it's dangerous for politicians. I even think it's dangerous for politicians to weigh in on verdicts when they think it's gone a certain way. There's an element of respect for the justice system. We saw the chief of police in Toronto get in hot water on this front. And Karima, just the fact that he says why he had limited information, but he felt he had enough information to smear an alleged criminal at the time.
Yeah, it was a pretty harsh statement that was made, given that the reasons for bail were under a publication ban. So it wasn't widely known why the judge decided the way they did, but the premier saw fit to criticize that specific decision and impugn the justice system overall. So now when he says that he respects the outcome, he respects the system, I don't think that seems disingenuous to me, because he betrayed a deep lack of respect in making those statements initially. And then you think about the fact that this government has altered the way that judges are appointed provincially, and Doug Ford himself has talked about wanting to have more like-minded judges. These are all things that compromise the integrity of our system, with having nonpartisan judges who will look at a case before them on the merits and rule appropriately, versus the politicization of court decisions. And so I think that an apology is absolutely necessary here and should be forthcoming, because even in Premier Ford's response that we heard just now, there is room to say, you know, I have learned from this. I won't do this again. And we're not getting that at all.
It's for a politician, Kevin, of one of which you are. It's a tricky thing, because I know the media comes to you and says, hey, what do you think of this? But the right thing to do is probably say it's in the hands of the courts. And until really the jury is sequestered, a politician could easily influence a case. We saw Joe Biden commenting all the time on what he hoped would happen to Derek Chauvin in the George Floyd murder. We can think what we want about that, but he shouldn't have done that. It's just a dangerous thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this is another occasion where it's important that we remind ourselves that a pillar of our justice system is innocent until proven guilty. You know, it's human to have an opinion, and I've definitely done it myself before, too, before I was elected. And so, as someone who knows a little bit about what it's like to be falsely accused, I think I've definitely made sure that I am practicing that instinct to do exactly what you said, Greg, which is like, listen, it's before the courts. It's up to the courts to now prosecute this and let justice do its thing. And we wait for the outcome before we opine, if at all.
Kevin, is he in a bit of a trap right now, though? People are calling him for him to apologize. If he apologizes, does the opposition jump on that? Or do they get more political capital from pointing out, you see, he would never apologize for this?
Yeah, I guess that's the nature of politics. I think Doug Ford seems to find a way to be able to kind of navigate these tricky issues seemingly quite well, in a way that only Doug Ford can do. And so I'll be watching to see how he manages this.
Let's move to polling for the federal government. And as an independent sitting in the House of Commons, Kevin, let's start with you. Right now, bottom line, there just hasn't been a bounce from the budget. And it's very clear the Liberals were hoping for that to be the case. And I think it's significant as well, the latest Angus Reid poll for under 40s. Kevin, we've talked about people of your generation, Karima's generation. This was meant to hit home for them, to say, we've got you. Wherever we've failed in the last 8 years, we're going to pick it up right now and allow you entry into home ownership, entry into the middle class. And it just seems fairly obvious, though it's only a poll and there's probably not an election for 17 months. It's obvious this didn't quite connect. Does that surprise you at all?
No, because Canadians can read and we can also do math, right? I'm going to zero in on one of their ludicrous, more crazy promises, which is to build 4 million homes in less than 7 years. So they expect us to believe that under Justin Trudeau's watch over the last 9 years, when the country averaged about 200,000 homes built a year, that somehow now Trudeau expects us to believe he's going to magically triple that number immediately and sustain that for almost 7 years, give me a break. I did the math, Greg, and before I get into the math, I want to put this 4 million number into perspective. In Toronto, as of the end of 2022, we have 1.3 million homes in all of the city. And so they're promising to build the equivalent of triple of all of Toronto in less than 7 years. And that's if home construction was happening 24/7, all hours, every day of the year, which we know is not realistic. They would have to be building a house a minute. But if we realistically remove holidays and weekends and adjust for a 60-hour work week, they have to build a house every 20 seconds. You know, during this time that I've spoken, they've built like a dozen houses based on that promise. So it's ludicrous. And Canadians, especially millennials like me, I'm 34, young Canadians are tired of Justin Trudeau lying to us. Or if I'm being charitable, maybe he just didn't do the math.
But there's an onus, isn't there, on the provincial government and the municipalities to build homes as well. And there's a lot of people frustrated with the red tape surrounding the Ford government. There's a lot of people frustrated that they haven't been able to get shovels in the ground, that starts are way down in Ontario. And you've seen the data, Kevin. People are leaving Toronto. They're leaving Southern Ontario as a whole because it's too expensive. The province has an onus there.
Absolutely. But they're not the ones that are going up in front of the microphone and promising Canadians, hey, we're going to build you 4 million.
I think they're promising builds. I think they're promising to get shovels in the ground. They're saying that they are when they're not.
Yeah, but not like this, right? And what they're doing with the budget is they're sacrificing our future. Like, look at the math in terms of the amount of debt. We spend more on debt than the Canada Health transfers to provinces for healthcare. We spend more on debt than we do on national defense, almost 1.5 times, right? And ultimately, who has to pay for that debt? We do, as young Canadians. And they're screwing us over so they can hold on to power for what, another year and a half?
Let me ask you, Karima, where you stand on some of the polls, and I'll map them out. And when you put them into seats as opposed to percentages, it shows the latest Angus Reid poll has the Conservatives at 229 seats. That's 18 more than Brian Mulroney run in a record 1984 election win. 45 for the Bloc, 35 for the NDP, 33 for the Liberals. It's unthinkable. The idea that the Liberals would have the fourth most seats, but that's where the polling lands right now, at least in this particular version of it.
Well, I think that there is a sense of fatigue with the current government that underlies this. And obviously we've come out of and are still enduring difficult times, and that's likely to, unfortunately, only get worse in the foreseeable future. So the instinct of people wanting change is not altogether surprising, especially where they feel underserved at the moment. And, you know, there has been, unfortunately, a lot of division that comes around Justin Trudeau as a personality on various issues and subjects. And so I think that there are demographics that have been alienated as a result of that. I don't know how much stock to put into a poll where there's no election that's in the horizon. But the, you know, the budget, if that was intended to sway opinion and it hasn't, it's either a matter of communication or not actually having addressed the concerns that are, you know, motivating people.
And I'll bring it to the capital gains tax and the doctors. And Kevin, you're well aware that this has landed really, really badly. In fact, the Minister of Small Business, Reshi Valdez, I thought had a disastrous interview with the CBC's David Cochrane, explaining that, well, if Canadian doctors leave, we'll just replace them with foreign doctors. And people of all political stripes are shocked by that kind of language. So even though it's 8 days later and people say, the news cycle moves so fast, I think the capital gains tax, especially for this occupation where we're short and healthcare matters so much to all of us, as you'll soon find out even more when you're taking kids in with sniffles and colds and the like, it's a problem, man. And I have no idea how Valdez hasn't walked this back in the last 2 days, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's something that this government has seemed to be unable to do. They can't admit a fault. They can't admit when they've got something wrong, because this capital gains tax hurts doctors. It also hurts tradespeople, right? Many small businesses entrepreneurs, the very people that we need to build the homes, the 4 million that they're somehow going to get us, are also hurt by this. The small business owners that are the engines of our economy across the country, where, by the way, the majority of Canadians work, are hurt by this. And so don't be surprised if you have not just doctors now, but skilled tradespeople. And I've heard from so many, I was a tech entrepreneur before I was elected. I've heard from so many people that are furious with this. What incentive do they have to take risks, to risk everything, to build a business? Part of the deal is, hey, you take the risk and you get the reward, and now they're being punished for being successful. Why would you build a business in Canada now?
Well, and Karima, there's a political philosophy. Daryl Bricker, the pollster, quoted Ronald Reagan about it, and the quote's pretty simple. In politics, if you're explaining, you're losing. You got to keep it simple for the audience. You got to keep it simple, trust me, for the media, and you got to keep it simple for the people who might vote for you someday. So there's been a ton of almost chalk talk about this capital gains tax, and it looks like you're trying too hard sometimes.
Well, there's a balance between, you know, not talking down to people and underestimating their intelligence, but also getting lost in the granular details that not everyone has the time to absorb or even the capacity to absorb. So I think, you know, there's not much I agree with as far as Ronald Reagan is concerned, but I think that that's a fairly accurate statement and slogan. And Pierre Poilievre and the opposition are quite successful at catchy slogans and domineering a narrative.
Hey, we're out of time. Appreciate you both being on this morning. Kevin, Karima, thanks so much.
Thank you, Greg.
Karima Saad, Kevin Vaughn, joining us on Think Tank. Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of The Daily Show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can hear the entire show on the radio, at home, on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa or say, hey, Google, play 640 Toronto or Toronto Today. You can hear us on between 5:30 and 9 weekdays on 640 Toronto. Have a great day.